Welcome to Transformers, the podcast about how business people and policymakers are creating a sustainable future. I'm your host, Kai Embren.
Welcome to Transformers, a podcast about changemakers and the environment. In this episode, we are focusing on methane, a powerful but often overlooked driver of climate change and the solution that can help address it. Here with me today, I have two voices with more than 20 years of experience, each approaching the climate crisis from different perspectives. One focused on cutting industrial emissions, the other on mobilizing global finance for climate action. Rickard Mattus is an industrial emissions specialist in methane mitigation. He co-authored the UNICEF's best practice guidance on ventilation air methane mitigation and has developed solutions for coal mine emissions. Sean Kidney is the CEO of the Climate Bonds Initiative, a global NGO working to align finance and markets with the climate goals and scale up the investment in low carbon infrastructure. Welcome.
Thank you, Kai. Thanks for having me.
Listen to what the first draw you to work on methane and why has it remained a focus throughout your career?
Well, I've been engaged a very long time with emission control, which means reducing emissions, industrial emissions to air. And in doing so, we came across a lot of different kinds of emissions, one of them being methane. And when I realized the role of methane in the climate area, I became quite engaged in that, in trying to make a difference.
And how many years has it been now?
Since the 90s.
You are the lead author and coordinator of a best practice guidance on VEM mitigation, published recently by the UNECE group of experts on coal mine methane and just transition. What is VEM and why is VEM of such a special climate interest?
Well, VAM or VAM, as we say, common practice, is the very low concentration of methane you find in the ventilation air of underground coal mines. And why it's of importance is that even though it's a very, very low concentration, it's less than 1%, so it's breathable air, the volumes are so enormous. It's a very large emission because of the volumes. So it's a large single source of emission of methane.
Then why is it the problem?
Well, when you look at emissions, you have to look at the sources. So if you look at a car emits around 2 tons of CO2 per year. If you look at the biggest sector of methane emissions, or anthropogenic, which means induced by man, it's cattle, it's livestock. A single cow emits between 60 and 120 kilos of methane per year, whereas a coal mine ventilation shaft can emit 50,000 tons or even more.
So what makes VAM emission of particular interest? Is it the size of the emission?
Yes. In the emission control area, you realize that if the emissions are fugitive, or if they're dispersed, it's very hard to do something about it. If they're focused to one source, then you can process it. So what makes it interesting is that you have a very large emission of methane coming out of a single source.
So the challenges lies primarily in extremely low concentration in enormous volumes of air. Is there any technology that can handle mitigation of this methane emission?
Well, the main obstacle is exactly what you say, extremely low concentrations, enormous volumes. A number of technologies have been tried in lab scale primarily, also some in larger scale. But there's only one so far that has been successful, and that comes from industry, and it's called RTO, regenerative thermal oxidation. And it was developed in the 70s to handle low concentrations of hydrocarbon.
So it's only one technology that's successful in mitigating them?
Yes. The first trials were made in the 1990s, and the first large-scale successful commercial project was commissioned in Australia in 2007. And today, there are a handful of international suppliers with relevant experience of MAM mitigation.
Well, you mentioned a comparison between the two most important greenhouse gases, CO2 and methane.
Yeah.
We hear more and more about methane, and how does it climate-wise compare with CO2?
Well, it's a bit tricky because they behave differently. So by volume, the biggest greenhouse gas is CO2, and that's the one we hear most about too. So when there is an overflow from the systems on Earth, it ends up in the atmosphere, and being the end product of most oxidation processes, nothing more happens to it. So it basically stays there forever. Methane is different. CO2 the molecule can retain some of the sun's heat radiation, which is what makes it a greenhouse gas. Methane can retain a lot. So much, much more than the CO2 molecule. But the big difference is that IPCC has defined a lifetime of methane in atmosphere of 12 years. So after 12 years, it oxidizes to form CO2 and water vapor. CO2 is also a greenhouse gas, but much less potent than methane.
How much potent?
Well, that's another tricky part. When you compare the potency of greenhouse gases, by principle, you compare it to CO2 based on 100 years comparison. So comparing CO2 and methane over 100 years, the definition is that methane is 30 times worse than CO2. But the difference is only in the first 12 years, because then they're equal. So this means that IPCC also defined a shorter basis of comparison of 20 years. And the status, the situation we are in now, climate-wise, is where we have to take action. We have to change the trend of global warming over the next 20 years, makes the 20-year comparison very relevant. And then, of course, 12 years is much more important. So the comparison factor comes to, instead of 30, it's 82. Almost 3 times.
So if methane in the atmosphere is in a way gone after 12 years, why oxidize it on beforehand?
Long term, you're absolutely right. It makes no sense. It only costs, energy and resources to have it pre-oxidized. But when we are in a situation where the reduction of greenhouse gases is too slow, it's an opportunity for us to, say, buy time until we have the big reductions of CO2 coming into place, which is basically phasing out fossil fuels. And then reducing large emissions of methane is a way to have an immediate and powerful impact.
Yeah, and we will look into the cost and investment cost for VAM mitigation. I heard it's very high. But how much does it cost?
But if you look at the cost per, say, emission reduction obtained, if you take the total lifetime cost of a project, meaning the investment costs, the operational costs, and the financing costs, over, say, 10-year lifetime, and then you divide that by the number of reduction units or carbon credits the project generates over that period of time, then you end up around $8. As simple as that. So to have investors being interested in doing something about it. You need to secure a value of around $20 for VAM mitigation, and then you will see a lot of projects realized.
Well, if you compare that to that cost, for example, but all governments now seem to promote CCS, carbon capture and storage, the technology you can provide with. Can you explain the difference?
Sure. Carbon capture and storage is conceptually an excellent way to reduce emissions. You capture the CO2 emissions at the source or at coal or oil-fired power plant, and you bury it in the ground in a way so that it stays. It's an excellent concept. And that's, I think, why most governments say that that's what we want to do. There was recently an auction taking place in Stockholm where a big power company here won the auction for CCS at a price of around $200 per ton to be compared to the 20. And I might add, when we say $20 per ton, that's, say, what the investor needs to have an interesting project. But for the, say, government or fund that pays $20 per ton, the actual effect, if you compare it on a 20-year basis, is almost three times as high. So you're looking at a cost for the actual reduction of methane at around $7 per ton CO2 equivalent. It's a lot of numbers, but, well, there are some CCS projects, and they believe that the cost can be around 100 to 150, but also when the first good locations are taking, you're looking at much higher costs than that, which is also indicated by the Stockholm project. Yeah. But you're right. I mean, there's a lack of awareness, and primarily it's a lack of financial driving forces for the investors to actually reduce the emissions. So whereas there should have been today hundreds of installations of VAM mitigation globally.
How many of the VAM mitigation installation are around?
Well, there is around a dozen. If you look at China, US, and the rest of the world, but two in the US, most of them are in China. There have been installations in Australia. Many of these installations have been operating for a long time, like 10 years or more. So it's proven to be a solid, secure, stable technology.
And you also have a carbon credit system in place with this technology.
The projects in the US presently are connected to California Board's trading scheme, where they have defined them as an approved way to reduce the emissions. But that's not the case in all parts of the world. And that's a change that we would like to see.
What would you say are the main barriers to implementation of more of the mitigation project?
Well, I think a main barrier is awareness, that people don't know that that possibility, that opportunity exists. And I think also it's a mental barrier when you talk about reducing emissions of ventilation and methane coming from underground coal mines. Say a backbone response is that we're going to close the coal mines, so don't make them more environmentally friendly. But that's just the point. We need to close the coal mines, but it's taking a long time. And a lot of the coal mines are not for thermal use, not for heating or electricity. They are for making steel, coking coal, and they will remain even longer. So the point is, as long as an underground mine is operating, especially the gassy ones, some are less gassy, some are more gassy, you need to take care of the methane emissions. And if you close a mine where you have a good VAM mitigation, you can relocate a good portion of the equipment.
Well, I see. But looking ahead, what role do you see innovation and finance is scaling up methane solutions globally?
There are other solutions than RTO. There is around a dozen development projects in the US, in Australia, in Europe, and in China. And some of them are bound to be successful. They are all, for the moment, in pilot scale, in lab scale. But a couple of years ahead, when you have, say, the bottom line, when you know which ones are successful, you can try them in the field, compare it to RTO, and they will also be viable options. But so far, the RTO solution is the prevalent one, or is the only one. And we should roll that out in as many locations as possible. Also in Europe, there are gassy mines in especially Poland, but also in Czech Republic. I believe there are 23 gassy mines that could do with some VAM mitigation.
If we look further on, then any last comment for the future?
Well, I think the two things, the awareness of the opportunity of VAM as a big methane emission that you can really obtain at a low cost, you can obtain a big positive reduction. And the other one is that the value or the cost efficiency of VAM and VAM mitigation, if you can secure a value of around $20, I mean, compare that to CCS, $20, you will see a lot of methane emission mitigation projects coming to be realized.
How many?
If we over the next 10 years could implement 50 major VAM mitigation projects globally, that would have the same effect as removing 100 million cars off the roads.
Let that be the last comment on our talk today, Richard. And thank you very much for your participation in Transformers.
Thank you, Kai.
Let's go into the finance and see investments opportunities. Welcome back to Transformer, Sean Kidney.
Nice to see you again.
You're the head of the Climate Bonds Initiative, CBI. You were one of the first guests in the Transformers podcast to discuss the Climate Bonds Initiative and green finance solutions. But today, we have a focus on methane and the coal mines. In 2024 blog, on China's transition, you emphasize the role of transition investments in energy. Given the high global warming potential of methane, do you see the opportunities to classify ventilation air methane, VAM, from coal under the climate bonds taxonomy?
Of course, yes. I mean, what we're about is anything and everything that will get emissions down quickly is essential, important, urgent. In fact, we convened and been organizing a methane abatement task force for the past year and a half now, actually, looking at criteria in the gas sector mainly for methane abatement measures. It's difficult, right? Because we've got to get methane emissions down fast. They're proving to be the most serious forcing gas in terms of our emissions at the moment. So they're blowing out our chances of dealing with CO2. By rapidly increasing greenhouse gases. Sure, we've got a reasonably short half-life, but way too long for the timeframes we have available to us. So we've got to do something about it. It's really urgent. At the same time, in the fossil fuel sector, we've just got to be careful not to be, licensing the fossil fuel sector to continue to emit in the medium term, long term. And we've been wrestling at that challenge at the moment going forward. But we're a big supporter of the methane abatement pledge. In the gas sector, we're putting out criteria for short-term investments that won't necessarily extend the life of a gas asset, but will reduce emissions, like capping ventings, addressing flaring, things like that coming forward. In the coal sector, we're just starting on that particular, but clearly we're not going to close our coal mines tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, which is what we should do. Let's be very clear about that. That's what our climate scientists are telling us. But in the meantime, while we continue to sweat them, hoping to hell we don't expand anything, that's part of the strategy, we've got to reduce emissions because we have severe coal mine emissions in China, for example. We're making some progress. I mean, in China, the regulators have now got a program to incentivize the reduction of emissions in coal mines. It's really good now. They need help on that one, and capital needs to flow and so on. For an investor trying to address climate change, this is vexing because there is an argument being put that they should be investing in methane reduction measures in coal mines when, understandably, they've developed this idea that coal is bad, we've got to kill coal. So how can this work? And this is the challenge of dealing with an incredibly complicated issue like reducing emissions globally. So we will be, in our China program, looking at the kinds of investments that are consistent with fast transition, but also address short-term methane emissions reductions that don't inadvertently extend the life of coal mines at power. There's a little bit of nuance in that, as you can imagine, but this is clearly something we have to do. It's really urgent. Now, step back. I mean, I'm not going to resile from the fact that come what may, we need to shift to clean energy of any kind as quickly as possible. That's one job happening, and that is happening at an astounding rate. And I actually think we're going to make real progress, much faster progress than the extraordinary progress we've made, especially in China, in the last 15 years, and then over the next 15 years. But in the meantime, the fossil fuel assets that we have to make sure that we drastically reduce leakage, emissions leakage from methane in the meantime.
Yeah, you talk about China, but when we look at the Canadian project, Biothermica, they demonstrate that legacy coal infrastructure can create climate value through methane capture, destruction, energy power, and carbon credits. But from an investment perspective, how can we better support methane projects with green bonds frameworks to unlock more institutional capital?
Look, individual investors at all times can look at individual projects and see if they can make an assessment, arrive at a view about the climate credentials of a project, right? That's the nature, or the nature of capitalism in the West, as is from in China, which is much more regulatory driven, addressing climate change. That's always open to people, but that doesn't happen in practice, and this is hellishly difficult and complicated. So the approach we've taken to move markets in a large volume and scale has been to develop this guidance, to channel the science, bring the science together to provide useful tools for investors to make this decision. That's been transformed into national taxonomy work that we're doing all around the world now, 60 countries. And so within that framework, which is bringing scientists together in the centerpiece and providing guidance to make it easier for everyone to decide what to do, we are looking at methane issues, such as coal. I talk about China because that's the largest source of coal emissions globally by a country mile. And so addressing it especially because there's a lot of very inefficient old coal mines that have got high leakage of methane. Yet the gas industry, the largest sources of methane leakage from gas is the USA, because fracking leaks like a sieve. So it depends on which particular form of fossil fuel you're looking at.
A lot of things are happening in this discussion related to China. When we talk about Poland, it's a part of Europe that could do much more to get into the system of carbon credits, isn't it?
So look, the way we're tackling it is let's come up with guidelines that in taxonomies and so on, and socialize them. As I said, it doesn't stop investors making decisions on individual investments anyway. They can do that. And there are some investors who've got a very aggressive approach to engaging in transition, who have developed the due diligence capability. But most investors don't have the due diligence capability, don't have access to the pool of scientists to work out something is really credible versus not so credible, you know. And gas is a classic example, been sold for 20 years as very credible. In fact, it's deeply problematic. You know, in Poland, that's importing US gas, which has a very high leakage rate, I'm happily able, willing to make a speech to say, keep the coal mines going, because if you're building new gas plants using US gas, your greenhouse gas footprint is much the same as a coal mine. And we all know coal's going to be shut down. It's got limited life. New gas assets have got a 30-year return on investment. You are building new fossil fuel assets when you should just be running down the old ones. Don't replace it with something that's as good. This is new for most policymakers. In the IPCC reports talked about it, of policymakers, it's challenging. But investors can make that decision now. But what we're now trying to do is provide guidance globally on this issue to be able to make faster decisions. That, of course, will then impact Poland, Australia, Brazil, as well as Canada, China, India as part of it if we get this guidance out. In the meantime, governments can regulate, the policy can do it. But the thing is, it's not happening very much in the European Union. Bringing in guidance in this area into European taxonomy would really lead to a fast track change across Europe if we can win that battle. So that's the sort of field we play in, which is not obviating by any stretch of the imagination the good work individual investors have or individual countries might do to promote the changes, which is all important. You know, we all have to do what we can in our spheres of influence.
Oh, great. Thank you, Sean, for this introduction to the discussion for methane and the coal mines.
Thank you for raising this issue, because we absolutely need more discourse on it.
I'm Kai Embren. Follow me on Twitter and LinkedIn, where I will be announcing the future guests. And each guest has a unique story of making business and society sustainable. So find out more. Visit my homepage, kaiembren.org. Thank you for listening.